Gold. Welcome back to the Hexing Cube podcast, a podcast where we talk about board games and the community that gathers around them. I am your host, Kyle Schubert, and tonight I am joined by Luke. We're going to talk about some games. Luke, what's up, man? Welcome back. How the crap are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. got a huge weekend of gaming in this last weekend, and that was really exciting. Fun to play some in-person games finally for a while, so yeah, doing great.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I saw the pictures, so we'll be talking about that in a minute. Tonight we're going to be hanging out, having a good time. Our topic for tonight is worker placement games. We're going to talk about what we think are some characteristics of worker placement games, and then talk about some of our favorite worker placement games, or at least some games that we think do the worker placement mechanism in an interesting way. So it's going to be a good time. Our news segment for tonight is going to be staggeringly scarce. And by scarce, I mean essentially non-existent. So as I get better at communicating, much of what I'm going to be doing is going to be made known to you listeners like right away after I do it, which may cause the news segment to become pretty much obsolete. I've thought about this a little bit, and I may just cut out the news portion of the podcast and maybe just stick to like Kickstarter news, and then maybe figure out some other segment to put in its place, something else that's fun or interesting or whatever. So we shall see. But for now, let's take a look at what's going on Kickstarter. There is a, dare I say, cornucopia of RPGs up on Kickstarter right now. If you are into RPGs, then you've got to be on Cloud 9 or maybe even Cloud 10, because there is like literally an RPG for like any kind of taste or preference or experience or person or whatever, like so many. For those of us that aren't into RPGs, or at least like those that are like myself who really enjoy RPGs but have chosen to prioritize other kinds of gaming experiences over them, we are in what I like to call dumpster town with regards to Kickstarter fare. There's really not a lot going on for Eurogamers right now. There's a few things that just wrapped up, like Carnegie and Tinner's Trail. But other than that, it's pretty slim pickings. However, I was able to find one game that looked pretty juicy, but it comes in an unlikely package. It is the second edition of a game called Maquis, and it is a solo worker placement game put out by Sideroom Games and designed by Jake Staines. Luke, have you heard anything about this game?
I have not. I haven't ever actually played a solo game. I'd be nice. Interested in trying the ones that are designed strictly for solo gaming. I think those would be fun. But I have not actually heard of that. So I don't keep my ear to the ground for solo games too much. So yeah, it's news to me. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a solo gamer. I've played a few solo variants of games, but never actually just a solo game, because I probably wouldn't just go in and buy one. I've grown to see the value in them and appreciate them for what they can provide. And some people just don't play games with other people. And while I think that that's extremely odd, that's great for them. Kudos to y'all who just play solo games. But this looks pretty dope, and so I thought I'd talk about it briefly. As I said, it's a solo worker placement game. And it's kind of on the lighter side from what I can tell. I don't really know much about the theme, so I'm going to be talking about it mechanically and not thematically. There's you know, art and pictures and things, and I don't know what they mean or what they stand for, but so in this game, what you're doing is pretty simple from what I can tell. There's not a lot of fluff going on. You have mission cards that you need to complete, and these different mission cards have different requirements that you have to meet. And you will do this by placing your workers and taking actions. Simple enough. However, in addition to you placing your workers, there will also be these patrol pieces that are like, maybe if there was another player playing the game, they're kind of like their workers in a way. But these pieces will be placed out onto the board in different worker locations. So they're never going to be placed into spaces that currently have any of your workers in them. But this is the really cool part of the game. So all of the action spaces on this like map that's on the main board are connected by routes. And at the end of a round, your workers must have a clear route back to the safe house. So from what it looks like, the board kind of, I guess, starts at the top, maybe with more beneficial actions at the top of the board. And then it kind of trickles down and the safe house is like somewhere at the bottom. So if the patrol pieces, as they come out onto the board, cut off your workers, you lose those workers for the rest of the game. There are like resources and such that allow you to manipulate the board and so on and maybe manipulate those patrol pieces or whatever, which makes a cool decision space of like, do I invest in the resources to deal with these random elements like the patrol pieces coming out, or do I focus on completing my mission? So it's kind of more or less a risk management game, which seems like it could be a fun solo experience if I were looking for one. I normally don't like luck or too many random elements in a game. But in a solo game, like that's part of the puzzle. That's part of the problem that you're trying to solve is like, there's these random elements that are coming out and you have to deal with them. And so, this sounds cool. If that sounds like a fun thing to you as well, go ahead and check it out. There'll still be like 10 to 14 days or so left on the campaign when this episode goes live, and it's already funded. So basically just go sign up to get your copy. Seems like there's a handful of people that are really pumped on it. So I thought that mechanism is perfect for tonight, right? We're talking about worker placement games. So I thought this was a great game to talk about. So, Luke, I saw the pictures of all the games that you got to play recently. Yep. I don't know if that's your most recent game night, but I'm sure that there's some in that group of games that you played that you might want to talk about. So why don't you kick off our game night segment by talking about some of the games that you got to play.
Yeah, well, we were able to squeeze in seven games. We were shooting for eight, but we ran out of time. We squeezed in seven games over the course of, we started about 1 o'clock on Friday and ended about 3 o'clock on Sunday. Okay. The first game we played is one of my favorites, and still one of my favorites is Barrage. Man, that game is awesome. And that is a worker placement game as well. If you haven't played Barrage, I highly recommend trying it out. I finally got to play Kalis for the first time. Okay. Wonderful game. The rule book, man, that is rough. I'm not a fan of the rule book. But if you can get through the rule book, the game is really cool and well, really, really fun to play.
Did you play like a newer edition of it, or did you play like one of the super old versions of the game?
It's not the, you know, old print. It was a newer print, but it was the old game. It wasn't the 1303 version.
Yeah. As far as I know, that's like a totally, like, I mean, there are some similarities, but it's like a pretty different game, I think.
Yeah, I was curious. I didn't watch a video about it, but I looked at some pictures, and it looks like it uses the same kind of road mechanic,
Yep.
But it doesn't look as mean or as tight.
Yep.
Yeah, Kalis is super tight. You're just always constantly running out of money, never have enough. And yet that's what makes it fun. So
yeah.
Got to play Hansa Teutonica for the first time, so that was really exciting. Yeah, dude, that was fun. It was interesting to see. I didn't do very much upgrading. I did a little bit, but I was like, I want to see if I can connect east and west without, you know, upgrading much. And the other players, I was playing against two other players, and they both upgraded like mad. And I thought I was going to be dead last. And actually, I tied for second place, so only lost by 4 or 5 points, I think. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was just amazed at how a game, you know, you have to pay so much by not upgrade. You know, you have to pay so much to upgrade stuff that, you know, if you're not upgrading, you get to do all these other things that also score you points. And so there's a lot of give and take there, and I thought that was really well balanced to see that. That was really cool. Yeah, we got to play City of the Big Shoulders, which is kind of a worker placement game. It's basically like if an 18XX game met a worker placement game.
Yep.
And so I don't know have you played City of the Big Shoulders?
Yeah. I have.
I really like it. After the last podcast I was on, I talked about playing my experience with 18XX games. I did try playing again. Still not a fan of those, unfortunately, but. But I really like City of the Big Shoulders. I think it's a really cool take on stockholding, running companies, and the way the workers work in this game is they're basically your partners, and you can use them for any of the companies that you are the executive officer in. And so workers aren't tied to a company. They're basically, so you could, one round you could use them all for one company, and the next round you could split them up half and half or however you want to do that. So I think that's a really cool way to do that. But we played other games, but I won't get into to too much detail.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think City of the Big Shoulders, as far as economic games go, it's probably one of my favorites that I've played. I've played a lot of like lighter economic games, but not like the real meaty, you know, the 18XX games or, you know, I actually haven't played a full game of Arkwright yet, but I like, you know, set it up, learned it, played through the first few rounds, and honestly, I was like, I was like kind of bored already with it, and I wasn't too excited about playing much more of it or even playing it with other people, which was kind of a bummer. But City of the Big Shoulders was wonderful. It took a little bit of getting used to, just because like I'm not used to playing you know, like true economic game with like shares and stock manipulation and stuff like that. And so just the way that it plays was just different than what I'm used to. So it actually, there was kind of a learning curve there, but by the end of the game, I was like, dude, this game is awesome.
So. I personally would like to see stockholding implemented into more games. You know, I think there's so much opportunity for it to be put in more games.
Yeah.
And I that's part of the game I really, really enjoy, trying to evaluate, you know, who's going to do well in the next round, and trying to, you know, forecast that and take advantage of cheap stock and stuff like that. It's really fun. So
that's awesome. Yeah, and it's funny, the last games that I played was in a similar context. It was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago now, but it was a similar thing where we just had a gaming weekend and played a whole bunch of games, kind of got our fill of games in for the last, you know, 6 months in one weekend, and it was super dope. We played Beyond the Sun. We played the Stauffer Dynasty, which is a Andreas Stedding game, the designer of Hansa Teutonica. We also then played Gugong as well, which is another one of his games. We played the Guilds of London and Bonfire. And then we played a couple other games that I didn't really care for too much. But I think my favorite game of that group was Goo Gong, and that was the first time I'd ever played it. And it's funny that you, you brought up Andreas Stedding's kind of his approach to Hansa Teutonica, because that's kind of a similar approach he takes in many of his other games. If you're familiar with his games at all, Goo Gong feels very similar, which I love Hansa Teutonica, and so I was like, oh, I'm going to get two Stedding games taken off the list in one weekend, and so I was excited about that, and they did not disappoint. But one thing that he does, or a couple things that he does, is you're always trying to find this balance between maximizing efficiency or you know, upgrading, like you were talking about, Hansa Teutonica, maximizing the efficiency of your actions, and then scoring points. And it's kind of this ebb and flow of like, all right, I need to upgrade here, but I need to take this scoring opportunity. And there actually becomes a point in the game where you generally transition from upgrading at all to just trying to get points. And trying to figure out when to make that transition is part of the difficulty of his games. And it sounds like you kind of experienced that with Hansa Teutonica. Is that right, Luke?
Yeah. And it's weird because, like, you're not, if you're not doing the upgrading, you think that you're like way behind and you're going to lose by a lot. And so it's kind of like you just need to stick to your guns and your strategy, and then everything will come out all right. I've been wanting to try Goo Gong, so it's really interesting to hear you talk about. I didn't actually realize that was the same designer. Yeah. That makes me, now that I've played Hansa, it makes me really want to play it even more because it does look, you know, very neat. So, the cost of doing things, you know, with, oh, do I upgrade it or I capture the city, or, you know, yep. You know, trying to weigh those costs and evaluate that. And the amount of balance that he has in Hansa is just unbelievable, you know, in my opinion. So I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful game. Probably in my top five favorite games of all time. But there's also another system that he seems to put in all of his games. It's in Hansa Teutonica. It's in the Stauffer Dynasty. It's in Goo Gong, where players have this court supply of pieces, and then they have like this province supply of pieces, and he uses maybe different terms for each game, but it's the same concept. The pieces in your province must be moved to your court before they can be used. Mm-hmm. It's a great system. He likes it. He uses it, you know, in all of the games of his that I've played. But the crux of Goo Gong is the action selection mechanism, and it is wonderful. So each player has a hand of cards. I think you start with four, maybe. And they all have different values and bonus actions on them. And then there is a face-up card on each action space on the board. So just picture a normal, you know, Euro game board with almost like worker placement type action spaces on the board, kind of little mini game areas. And each one of them has a card space with a card on it, and that card has a value. So to take an action, you have to trade a card from your hand with the card that is on that action space. And if the value of the card you are trading is higher than the value of the card you're picking up, you can take the action for free and all is well. If the card value you are placing down is lower than that of the card you are picking up, then you suffer a penalty. And depending on what you have available to you, the penalties can be pretty brutal. It's cool. Like, it's really thematic. Like, the theme is you're trying to give gifts to like the emperor to sway, you know, his opinion of you or something like that. So you're wanting to give more highly valued gifts and receive lower valued gifts. And so it's just really, really clever. And it creates really interesting decisions. And when you trade out a card, the card that you pick up goes into your discard, which is the round tracker. So once everybody is out of cards, the round ends. It's lovely. If you haven't played it, check it out. It's awesome. Gugong, Andreas Stedding. Boom.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's like, it's really, what we would maybe call elegant. There's not a lot of clunky rules. There's like one little, mechanism in the game that we felt like was maybe could have been cleaned up a little bit or altered. But other than that, it's just like super streamlined, you know, interesting decisions. The action selection mechanism is awesome. Just a solid, solid game. And, I feel like, I mean, I know there's some people that really enjoy it, but it's not really a game that gets a ton of buzz, at least from, you know, what I can see. And that's a shame because it's mm-hmm. Fantastic.
I did have one other game that I would like to talk about.
Yeah.
I've played. Have you played Concordia?
I have. It's been a minute.
Have you played it with the Venus expansion?
I have not.
So the Venus expansion, for those of you who don't know, Concordia is an action selection game where you have, it's kind of a hand-building game. If you've played Century Spice Road, it's very, very similar. You have a hand of cards, you play one, take the action, and then once you've laid a card, you have to leave it out until you play a card to pick up all your cards. Concordia is like that, but you're also in that mechanism, but you're in that game, Concordia. You are placing basically developing cities in different territories to score points, and these points are tied to the cards that you have, and you're allowed to get different cards and stuff. Highly recommend the game. One of the most elegant newer games that I've played in a very long time. The rule book's like literally like a large page folded in half. But the Venus expansion makes the game a team game. And so you have a teammate that you're playing with. And so we played it four players, so there was two teams of two. And that was one of the funnest transition, you know, the same game I've played several times, but transitioned it into something completely different that was so much fun. So instead of, you know, you play a card, you do the action on the card, what happens is you play a card, and you and your teammate both have to do the same action. And so, but you can't talk about what you should do. And so you're trying to look at the board, looking at your teammates' resources and everything, and trying to determine what is good for both you and them. And so that brings some really interesting, interesting choices. There are a few changes that they make, to make it work better with two player, or to make it work better with teams. But man, that I would definitely play that again. That was a very good experience. So highly recommend.
Dude, that's awesome because at this, you know, this gaming weekend that we just had, a few of the other dudes, they played the team variant of Castles of Burgundy.
I didn't know there was a team variant of Castles of Burgundy. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. Like the boards, like basically connect and make one like giant player board where you're placing things on. But they were not impressed with it. Like they said that basically it's just castles, but you have like a bigger player board, and there's not a lot of like rules changes or mechanism changes that really make the team aspect of it shine. There's no like limited communication or any, you know, anything like that. And so they were really disappointed with it, but Venus sounds awesome.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if we were allowed to communicate, I don't think I would like it. nearly as much. I mean, obviously we can talk, but we can't talk about our choices in the game and stuff.
Sure. Right?
And so I thought that was really fun to like, you're like looking at their resources and trying to judge what they want to do. And then you lay something and they're like, oh, thank God. You
know? That's awesome.
And like one of the cards they add in the game to make it a little bit easier is you can play a card where you take your teammate's hand of cards, you select one and put it in front and then hand it back to them, basically suggesting like, this is the card I want you to play. They don't have to listen to you, and you only have one of those cards until you get to pick up your hand, so it's not like you can keep doing it. But you know, just some fun things like that that they add to make it. Yeah, they did a tremendous job with it. So yeah.
That sounds awesome. I've been on the lookout for like a solid team based Euro game, and that sounds like it might tick that box for me.
Yeah. So the Castles of Burgundy, is that an expansion or is that just like rules somewhere? Or
yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, there's definitely like different components for it. I think maybe it came in the latest edition of the game. You know how they put out like that
big
prettier
box or whatever.
Yeah, the prettier version of the game with I think it came with like all of the kind of mini expansions that were previously released independently, and mm-hmm. this version just put all of them in the same box. And so I think that was one of the, you know, one of the mini expansions or variants or whatever they call it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but they weren't impressed, so I'll have to.
That's too bad.
Yeah, we'll have to get the Venus expansion for Concordia and try that out, because that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's get after the topic for tonight, which is worker placement games. And it seems to me, from what I can tell in my research, that the term worker placement came into more of a heavy circulation in the early 2000s. But the genre or the mechanical implementation, as we will define it in a minute, was first seen with games like Keydom and Bus, and started becoming more popular with games like Agricola or Kalis, as you mentioned earlier. But now worker placement games are like they've taken over, and they're extremely popular across the entire hobby. And not just in German style games. It's used in every weight and style of game imaginable. So let's talk a little bit about what a worker placement game is. And I think that the BGG definition is pretty spot on, which is not always the case. I feel like sometimes I read BGG definitions or just the way that they classify things. And I'm like, dog, what are you guys talking about? But this one, I felt like they were pretty spot on. But I thought before we read their definition, I thought it would just be interesting to kind of get your perspective, Luke, on what a worker placement game is. So how, like, if somebody was asking you, hey, what's a worker placement game? Like, how would you describe it, and maybe what would be some characteristics that are true to the worker placement mechanism?
Yeah, so it's an interesting topic because, like you said, worker placement is very popular right now. To me, at its core, worker placement is basically a form of action selection, but with tying your game design to a theme. It can be something more fun to give a player something that makes sense. So like, oh, we are mining, you know, some kind of resource or whatever. I'm going to send a worker there, right? And so that part of worker placement to put a kind of a personality on the pieces that you are using to select the action, I think ties in the theme better for some people. You know, the different ways that worker placement can be used, you can add just little tiny changes, and then all of a sudden the worker placement is totally different. You can add like the Mancala aspect of into worker placement. If for instance, in like Venos, you have a worker on this 3x3 grid, and you have to move them adjacent to one of the grids that you're on, and to select an action. And so there's you can't just go anywhere. You could pay to go anywhere, but it's going to cost you. And so adding just little other mechanics can kind of throw a twist into worker placement that can also be interesting. But at its core, I think it's action selection.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you used that term to describe it, and I'll talk about why I'm glad you use that specific term. But let's look at how BGG defines worker placement. And I think that there's some really good foundational principles that kind of define worker placement. So here's how it's defined on BGG. More precisely referred to as action drafting, this mechanism requires players to select individual actions from a set of actions available to all players. So even just in that one sentence, there's like a handful of like really key distinctives. But it goes on. Players generally select actions one at a time and in turn order. There is usually a limit on the number of times a single action may be taken. Once that limit for an action is reached, it typically either becomes more expensive to take again or can no longer be taken for the remainder of the round. As such, not all actions can be taken by all players in a given round. An action blocking occurs. If the game is structured in rounds, then all actions are usually refreshed at the start or end of each round so that they become available again. So overall, Luke, how do you feel about that definition?
Yeah, that works very great. the aspect of the limit of the amount of times it can be taken. I guess I didn't cover that. And I didn't have an answer prepared beforehand. But that definitely is an aspect of it. I'm trying to think of a game that doesn't have a limited amount, and I'm having a tough time finding one. But I'm sure there is something somewhere, right, where it's unlimited, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe then it's not worker placement.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of part of what we're talking about here is semantics, right? We're talking about how we define things, and is this A or is this B based on the definition of A and the definition of B, right?
Yeah.
And so before I even looked up BGG's definition and I did some research on some other blogs and stuff, before I did that, that was one aspect for me in my mind that was definitive of a worker placement game, was that when you place your piece into an action space, you are affecting that action space for other players, whether you're whether you're blocking it, whether you are making it more expensive, whatever. That to me has always been kind of a core definition of what a worker placement game is. And I think I love the term action drafting, because that really more accurately describes what you're doing. You are in turn order drafting an action, implying that you are going to get to take this action, or at least this version of the action, and nobody else is going to get to take that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that that kind of description of worker placement.
It also says in that definition, and I've seen this in many games, where it may still be available, but yes, it's going to be more expensive. And yep. I think that's an important aspect of it as well. You may be able to take the exact same action as someone else, but you may either be paying, you know, some form of something to the bank, to that player, to, you know, in some fashion. So I think that's an important aspect to it as well.
Yes, definitely. That's what I was saying. Like it affects how other players take that action, whether it's cost or maybe it's not available at all or whatever. I think that if we were to like distill this definition down, I would say that is kind of the core of it or the crux of it, is that when you take an action, in a sense, you are drafting that action, and other players may be able to gain one or all of the benefit of that action space, but how they take the action or what it costs or whatever is going to be altered in some way. Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. And so before we get into some worker placement games that we dig or that we think are just cool examples of different forms that worker placement takes, I kind of wanted to touch on a little bit of the semantics that we've been talking about. And you actually, I think you said this earlier, but I often hear people say, this isn't really a worker placement game. It's more of an action selection game, right?
Okay. Yep.
Which is interesting to me, because in my brain, that's similar to saying, this isn't quite a carrot. It's more like a vegetable. It seems to me that people often categorize games with worker placement-ish qualities that they know don't quite fit the definition that we've outlined here of a worker placement game as an action selection game. But I guess I think, like, aren't most games action selection games, right? If we're using that term, like, definitively, right? Like, the action selection mechanism in a game is simply the mechanism by which players choose what they're going to do. So therefore, a worker placement mechanism is just a specific kind of action selection, not necessarily the alternative to action selection. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think in the style and type of games that we like most, I think action selection is very common. But if you take a broader look at, you know, a lot more commercialized games, you know, action selection isn't really the what they're about. You know, you have some trivia games and some other kinds of games that really bring on some, you know, some dexterity games. And there may be choices in those games, but you're not really choosing actions. And so the type of games that I really like mostly are action selections. And the very popular ones are worker placement, because I think people really enjoy thinking about what other people are trying to do and what they are trying to do, and evaluate how they can both accomplish their goals and disrupt the other players at the same time. At least that's what I like doing. So
yeah.
I think that's why they're so popular. But I would say that, you know, not all games are action selection. There's a lot that are, and that worker placement is within that category, right? Like you said,
it's
action selection is the vegetable. Worker placement is the carrot.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. And I love that you bring up that there are games that don't include an action selection mechanism of any kind. And I think you're probably right that those are generally games that, like, we're not excited to play, generally speaking, right? Yep. I think that's what draws us to what we would consider hobby gaming as a whole, but even more specifically to, like, Euro games, generally Euro games, they are action selection games, meaning you have the ability to decide what you're going to do and in many cases, how you're going to do it. But I think that this is interesting, and this kind of leads me to my next point, is that I think we are still in the process of like categorizing and defining things in hobby gaming, right? We've worked through the process of defining worker placement, which is why we have such like a robust and specific definition for it. But there are all these other kinds of action selection mechanisms that we are kind of still in the process of defining their characteristics, or at least, you know, at the very least, disseminating those definitions into the mainstream board game populace, right? And I think that's why we often say this isn't a worker placement game; it's an it's an action selection game, because we don't have as precise of definition for it as we do for a worker placement game, right? And so we just kind of lump all the other things that are kind of similar to worker placement just into the broader definition of action selection. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think another thing is designers are constantly trying to think of new and interesting ways to incorporate and use mechanics.
Yep.
And tweak them and marry them with other mechanics. You know, I was going to talk about it a little later, but it's a good time to talk about it now, maybe. Like Keyflower, if you've ever played Keyflower, it's a worker placement game, but you also use the workers to bid on tiles. And so is it a bidding game or is it a worker placement game? It's kind of a marriage of both. And so I think with mechanics constantly like changing and evolving, trying to keep the definition of something or even defining it in the first place is difficult. I think that BGG is doing a great job. I don't know who's actually writing those. I think they're doing a great job of keeping up, but again, it's always changing. Once you think you have a grasp on something, a new game comes out where a mechanic that you've really loved is also all of a sudden new and exciting and different, and that gets people excited too. So yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man, definitely. Yeah, I made a couple notes, you know, just echoing exactly what you just said. Like, because designers are constantly trying to innovate, the challenge of trying to classify everything becomes extremely daunting, right? Like, there's just constantly new things and new implementations and whatever. So yeah, just like you said, like trying to keep up with these definitions and you know, categories and classifications and whatever, like that is very difficult. And also, by the way, I believe Jeff Engelstein is working with BGG on all of their classifications and stuff, because he just came out with one of his newer books. Has to do with
building blocks of tabletop game design.
Well, I know one of his newer books, like, it's basically an encyclopedia of mechanisms, and he goes through all the defining attributes, you know, different ways that they're implemented, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this one has. So it's got actions, resolution, game end and victory, economics, auctions, worker placement, movement, blah 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 blah.
It's
got a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, he's
a smart dude.
Yeah, he's great for if you're more interested in maybe what we would call like the academic side of gaming, he's really he's brilliant when it comes to that stuff. So at the end of the day, you know, it very well may not matter what people call a lot of this stuff, as long as we can all communicate in a mutually beneficial way. But alas, a show like this would have no meaning if we weren't able to define and differentiate between terms, right? Like, if I said, hey, we're doing a show on worker placement games, but worker placement can mean whatever you want it to mean. Like, that would be a zany show, to be certain. Yeah. Like, we would have no idea what we were talking about. So yeah, discussions like this, some people might not dig them, but I think they're important for a discussion such as this. So let's go ahead and take a look at some worker placement games that we enjoy and appreciate for how they implement this mechanism. So, Luke, I'll let you start us off. Maybe just go ahead and start with, pick any game that you have on your list. And you don't have to go into like a whole rules explanation or whatever, but just kind of give us an overview of how they implement the worker placement mechanism and, maybe just why you think it's cool.
Awesome. I'll try not to do any stealing of games I think you're going to talk about.
No, if you do, I'll just comment on it after you're done. So right no on. Worries.
I'm actually going to start with probably a surprising one, a game called Village. And if you haven't played it, I recommend it. It's very fun.
It's so good.
It's not one of my like top favorites, but it is very enjoyable. Basically, you have workers, and you are basically kind of like a farmer. And there's during gameplay, you're going to select a certain cube color from an action space, and so that in itself is not really a worker placement. But by spending a certain amount of some of those resources along with other resources, you get to place one of your family members out in different areas of the village. And in doing so, you have to spend a certain amount of time and resources again to train them to do a certain ability. Or you could send them traveling, or there's all kinds of things you can send them doing. And the workers that you have, your family members, have different numbers on them. And basically that represents the generation of your family line. And as time progresses and there's the Black Plague that can affect the timing of things, some of your workers will eventually die, which is, kind of morbid in a board game. But you basically, once they die, they are basically written in this ancestral book. And you're going to be scored on, oh, this was one of the first, wagon builders of our time. And he was a great wagon builder, and you're going to be scoring points off of that. And so the way that you use your workers to train them, and then eventually they have to die, and then you'll have to, you no longer can use them in that part of the village. I think playing with that and the timing of that and making those choices is really fun and very, very unique. I haven't really seen another game like it. So that's one I really enjoy. Have you played that one?
I have. It's been a minute since I played it. But one thing I remember really enjoying about kind of the worker aging kind of aspect of the game was, isn't there, and correct me if I'm wrong, and have you played it recently? I mean, do you remember the game pretty well?
It's been about a year or so.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there kind of generally when you're placing your workers out onto the board, you can either choose to age them or to spend more resources, and you kind of have to choose between the two?
Yeah, so you could it depends on the action. Some you have to spend both resources and time. This is interesting time mechanic. So you could either spend like a certain amount of resources to do something, or you could spend time to train them, and then they're basically trained to do that thing. And so then you can do it on later turns for cheaper. So you can either like go and just spend resources to buy a wagon, or you could spend time to train your family member to build wagons. And then they're a wagon builder. And then it's easier to get wagons later turns until they die. So yeah. So there's kind of some give and take there. So, yeah, like I said, it's not really a worker placement in like the truest sense, but it also does feel like a worker placement game too. So,
yeah, that's a good one. I didn't have that one on my list, but that I remember really enjoying that game when I played it. I actually I was just thinking about it recently. I was like, man, I got to find somebody that has it so I can play it again.
I've got it. Yeah.
You got it? Oh, we got to play it.
Yeah. You want me to talk about another one or you want to take one? Should we go back and forth? You want to
let's just alternate. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So I'll actually mention one that I think you probably won't mention, but I really enjoyed the worker placement implementation in Raiders of the North Sea by Shem Phillips. Have you played that one?
I have played it a couple times.
Okay. So, you know, much of the game is kind of like, you know, whatever. It's not too exciting. But they combine the worker placement mechanism with kind of a worker retrieval mechanism as well. I mean, you don't trigger an action, I don't believe, when you pick up a worker. Again, this is one, it's been a minute since I played it. But you, when you place a worker out, you take the action, and then you have to pick up the worker that is in that space. And the workers have kind of different tiers of, I guess, power, if you will. And so, like, there are certain actions in the game or certain areas on the board that only higher levels of worker can get to. And so there's this cool, like, you know, trading in and out of different players' workers amongst the different players as you're, you know, taking actions and then picking up other people's workers. And I just thought it was really satisfying. Like, I loved being able to, like, you know, place a worker and immediately pick one up. It was just really fun.
Yeah.
Like I said, the game as a whole, like, it's okay. But I enjoy it. And do you resolve the action when you pick up the worker as well? Or is it just, it's just when you place, right?
I believe it's just when you place. Unless there was like one spot where if you picked up a certain color worker, you got a bonus or something. It's been a couple of years since I played it. It's
cool.
Yeah. I always thought that would be a fun thing, a fun way to implement worker placement is both a worker, you know, placement and the worker retrieval, which, I think you're working on something with that, aren't you?
We are.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So I just liked the decision space of like, okay, I need this better, this kind of improved worker, but the only action spaces that have those workers right now are not necessarily like optimal for me. And so having to decide, like, do I take this less optimal action just so I can get this more valuable worker? Or, you know, do I kind of push that back a couple turns and wait for a more optimal action that has a higher valued worker? Because on top of that, it's kind of a race game. Like the board will progress in a way that, like, at a certain point, the points are just gone. And so you're kind of racing as well. So I enjoyed that decision space in that game.
There was an interesting progression to that game where,
yeah.
Yep. I mean, you say there's higher tier, and there is. So the higher tier is like working towards the buildings, conquering the buildings higher up on the board. But I think there were some very valuable, like, worker color, like the pieces are different colors. I think they're like white, black, gray, brown, whatever. But there are some that, like, you wouldn't think are very valuable until you need them. And you're like, oh gosh, I really need a, you know, this color worker, 'cause I need money or, you know, whatever it is. But the progression of the game is really cool because it's like you start on this little, like, part of the land where, like, during the first, like, third of the game, you're like mostly doing actions there, and then eventually you kind of work out to the sea a little bit, and the game has this way of kind of pacing you. You can't go all the way to the top of the board until enough workers kind of come out, enough resources and certain resources and stuff to, in order to conquer these bigger places. So I think the pacing of the game was really, really cool. As well as the, you know, having to decide which which action to take, and you know, thinking about your next action because that's the worker color that you're taking too. So yeah.
Yeah.
And they've had other games too that kind of play around with the same aspects as well.
They have. Yeah, they kind of do a little bit of a twist on worker placement, like in all of their games. Like each game is kind of a different implementation of it, but I just remember enjoying that one. So
cool. I'm going to tie kind of two games together, more talk about one than the other, but so in a lot of worker placement games, you usually place one worker in an action selection spot or a, you know, worker placement spot. But a fun way that a couple games have done it is where you take any number of workers, like an action selection spot or a worker placement spot, will have an amount of workers that you need to contribute in order to take the action. And so two of the games that I came up with for this is Feast for Odin and Barrage. So in these games, there are actions, I can't remember if there's private actions for Feast for Odin, but there are private actions for Barrage. So on the Barrage player boards, your personal player board has an action selection or worker placement spot that allows you to build one of the building pieces in on the board. And the first one costs one worker, and the second building costs two workers, third building costs three workers, and the fourth building costs three workers and three gold. And then on the public placement spots, the actions are incremental. So the first spot on some of the actions will cost one worker, and then the second person that places there often costs two or three workers, or the first place that person that places there costs two workers. You know, so it's a varying amount of workers, and you start with like, I think it's like 12 workers. So it's quite an amount, but trying to decide, you know, that's an added cost. How many workers am I going to contribute to that? And again, once the spot's taken on those games, they become much more expensive. And so I think that's a really cool way to use the worker placement as well.
Barrage is kind of a hybrid, because the main board area where you're placing workers very much fits our definition of a worker placement game, right? When you take an action, you are affecting how the other players are going to take their actions, right? You're either making that action more expensive or blocking a space or whatever. But then you have, like you said, those kind of personal action spaces, which would not really fit into the definition of worker placement, in that, like, you just have free access to, you know, take them if you have the available resources and nobody else can prevent you from doing so, right?
Yes, so, but they do. I mean, the more it's done, it does become more expensive. So
it's almost like it's kind of
another hybrid, right? How do you define that?
And is that kind of how it works in, Feast for Odin? Cause I haven't played that one yet.
It's been a while again for Feast for Odin, but I believe you only have public actions. But that game, you know, you spend, it's basically got like columns and rows, and like a row of actions are pretty similar, but like if you spend two workers, you're going to get the weakest form of that action. If you spend four workers, you're going to get the strongest version of that action. And they change a little, you know, little things tweak and change and stuff. But, you know, you often come down to, oh, I got seven workers and I want to do, you know, two four-worker actions, you know, what do I do? You know, so. But back to Barrage, I think the reason they chose to do the private actions is building those buildings is a very important part of the game. And I, you know, if you're not building those buildings on the board, I think you really, really fall behind in it. I don't know how you'd balance that. So there are times in the game because the spots on the board where you can build the buildings is the limiting factor.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what they can, you know, the limiting, like once a person builds on a spot on the map, you know, that's the, no one else can build there. That's the limiting factor. And so maybe that's, that could, you know, fit your definition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can only make a game so tight and contested, right? And Barrage already has enough elements in it that like make the game tight and tense, and there's a lot of player interaction. And so they probably experienced like having those actions be public, like the game is just too bloody for what they wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We still said, kind of pun intended, we said damn a lot when we were playing that game. it's a game about building dams.
Yeah. Those are great. Those are great games. Barrage is awesome. I'll talk about another game by the Italians. So Lorenzo Il Magnifico is probably up there in one of my, you know, my top list of favorite games. And the worker placement in that game, I think is really enjoyable, really satisfying, really interesting. You have four workers. Three of them are colored workers, and then one of them is like an uncolored worker. And they all are associated, well, the three colored workers are associated with three colored dice that are rolled at the beginning of each round. So, for example, I don't remember the exact colors, but
orange, you white, have a, black.
What? White, black, and is it orange?
Orange, yeah. Orange, white, and black, yep.
Yeah. So, you'll roll an orange, a white, and a black die, and then those values that come up are associated with the corresponding color of worker. So you might have a worker that's a value of 2, one that's a value of 4, one that's a value of 5. And then your uncolored worker is always a 0. And so there's a resource in the game that you can spend to increase the value of your workers. So for each of that resource that you spend, you increase it by 1. So you always have to spend resources to make that uncolored worker valuable, unless you have some other kind of upgrade. And the game is an engine building game, but
kind of literally an engine building game too, right?
Yeah. It's but I love, one, I love that the input randomness that you experience applies to all of the players equally. I love that. And then the just the decision of, because there's a lot of little kind of little rules on how you place workers and which workers you can place where. Basically you're going to be acquiring cards that are going to give you points or bonuses or become part of your engine, and these different types of cards are put into these different towers. And so once you place a worker in a tower, if another player wants to go to that tower, they have to pay, I think, 3 coins or something like that.
Oh, it's so expensive. That game
is, which is really expensive.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, it deters players from going to that tower at all. But each tier on each tower requires a minimum value of worker to go there. And so it's just, you're constantly wrestling with like, okay, I have this 5 value worker, but I want to, you know, run my engine at a 5 or higher, but I also want to get this card at a 5 or higher. And if I, you know, if I use my 5 to get the card, then I'm going to have to spend a whole bunch of the servant resource to increase this other worker so I can run my engine. And then the action spaces that actually run your engine, like, depending on how many players you play with, there's like only 2 spaces and each one runs a specific engine. And so it's like really tight. You're constantly debating which move to take and when. It's wonderful. I really enjoy it.
You're always making that decision like, oh gosh, is that person going to take this
this action. And if you take a tower action and they wanted to take a tower action, all of a sudden it's three coins more, and so that may force them to take an action that you wanted to.
Yep.
So it's like, I love that game as well. Maybe for those of who don't know, maybe Kyle, explain a little bit how running your engine actually works in the game, because that part is really cool in the game as well.
Yeah, that part is cool, and that actually plays into the importance of like managing your worker values. So there's two types of engines, if you will, that you'll be putting together on your player boards. Buildings and territories, I believe. And so one of them has a gear symbol on it, and the other one has
an axe.
Yep, a hatchet or an axe, yep. And so each card that goes into your engine will do something different, provide you with a resource, give you a bonus action, whatever, when it's triggered. But to trigger it, you need to use a worker with a certain value or higher when taking that action. So for example, if I had two green cards, which are the cards with the hatchets on it, one of them may have a three value worker requirement, and one may have a five. If I were to take that action to run that engine with a four value worker, I would trigger the three value card, but I would not trigger the five value card. So it's always better to run your engine with, generally speaking, it's better to run your engine with a higher value card. If you only have engine cards that are lower value, then it's not quite as much of an issue. But generally, you know, you want those higher value cards because they're better. So that's another aspect of like managing the value of your workers, because your engine depends on specific values. It's good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. When I saw that in that game, that really, really intrigued me. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Kanban EV. Or the original Kanban too, is a very cool worker placement game. Basically, you are one of the managers running this car factory, and the way it works is games that have worker placement where they have where you place it the worker and then you resolve in a certain fashion really intrigue me, right? So like, there are worker placement games where you place a worker and then immediately resolve the action. You know, you have Caverna, you have Russian Railroads, Barrage, those games. And then you have games where you place a worker and then you resolve it in a certain order that's kind of predetermined. So like Kalis, you resolve it on the road, right? You're placing all your workers and then you resolve it in the order of the road. Or Dominant Species is another one where you place your workers and then you resolve it in order. Kanban is the same way, where you place your workers and you never really take it back into your personal hand, which is kind of another aspect of a lot of worker placement games. Is usually after a round or a set amount of time or actions or whatever, everyone picks up their workers, brings them back into their like player area. In Kanban, your worker is always on the board. And so if your worker is at a spot, it is currently blocking another worker from taking that spot. But then moving your workers is in that order. So there's a line of, you know, I think there's five or six actions. Where the person at the top of the board will move their worker first, and they have to move it to an available worker spot. And so they move it to an available worker spot, then the next person goes, and the next person goes. And so as people are moving, more actions
selection, worker placement spots are opening up. And so, but then it's also resolved in a fashion that you have to try to pay attention to who's doing something first and where to place. And so I think that's really fun to look at, you know, what someone's trying to do, where they're currently sitting, playing with that, that aspect of when they're going to move and how I'm going to get into that spot. And that's really fun. And it's really tight. And sometimes you can choose to take, in most worker placement games, you want to take the action that is, gives you the most stuff, right? The next person that chooses that action gets less stuff, right? Boo-hoo.
Yep.
But in this game, you might want to take less stuff because you get to do the action first if you take less stuff. And then you will get to take something that they maybe wanted. So there's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, it's fun. Have you played it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's fun.
Yeah, that's another one you're gonna. Yeah, you're gonna have to teach me that one.
Yeah, I have a copy coming. I don't currently own it yet, but it's one of these game stores is supposed to be supplying me with it, so I'm excited. I've only played it online, so I'm excited to play it in person. But
nice, dude. Games in person are just better.
They're just way better. Yeah.
Well, so for the sake of time, what I'm going to do is there's three games that I just want to touch on, like, kind of quickly, because I just think that they do some interesting things, or at least maybe one of them I can use as an example of, like, one type of variation of worker placement. So first one is Bora Bora by Stefan Feld. And this for me is kind of representing a whole other type of worker placement game, and that is the dice placement game, right? So where the dice are essentially your workers, and in some games, you know, you roll the dice at the beginning of the round, and then that's your pool of workers. Some of them, the dice actually just stay static, and they change as you do things, and they, I guess, upgrade, if you will. But at least the way that Bora Bora does it, I think is really cool. You do roll them at the beginning. It's a Stefan Feld game, so there's some chance and some randomness. But in Bora Bora, there's like a bajillion ways to like mitigate it, which I think is like, that's part of the game, is just, how are you going to mitigate the rolls? But anyways, the actual worker placement of the game is really cool, because he is able to allow players to utilize both high and low rolls, which I think is cool. So there's, you know, we'll say there's six worker spaces out on the board, and you place a die there, and the value of die that you place there determines, in many cases, the power of that action, right? But then, if another player wants to place there, they have to place a die that's, I believe, equal to or lower than the die that's currently there. So, if you really want to be that person, like, you could put a one value on a worker space and completely block everybody else from going there. And in that way, the ones, or the lower value dice, become very valuable, because you can completely block somebody from taking an action for the rest of the round, which they might desperately need to kind of fulfill their strategy or you know, progress in their strategy. And so, like I said, there's tons of ways to mitigate the dice and do all of that. And I think that's part of what's interesting about the game is, again, going back to this concept of, like, do I spend actions getting these resources that let me deal with the randomness, or do I just, you know, go for straight points, or do, you know, that decision is really interesting. And I think how he uses the dice placement implementation of worker placement is really cool and really interesting. Have you played World War?
No, we've talked about that. I need to play.
Okay.
Last time I was at down in your territory, I would have bought that game if I can't remember his name, but someone else had bought that used game version of it. I would have bought it, but that's okay. Dude, you have it, right?
I have it.
So we'll just play it sometime.
Yeah, I'll teach you. We'll trade teaches.
There you go.
The other two games that I want to touch on real quick. One is a game called Wisdom of Solomon, which is not a super well-known game, but it's a pretty standard worker placement game. There's not a lot crazy going on with the game, but there is one mechanism that involves the worker placement that I think is really interesting and really fun. So there's all the normal worker placement spaces, right? Trading in resources, you know, doing various things. But then there are these four distinct action spaces that are kind of tied into one system. And each of these four action spaces are like super OP, like really broken. You can do like ridiculous things with each of these action spaces. Additionally, when you take one of them, you also get the first player marker. So you'll be going first in the next round, which is also powerful. The catch is when you take one of those actions, once one player chooses one of those four actions, nobody else can take any of them. So if I take one of the four, they're all closed off for the rest of the round.
Wow.
The other catch is that to take the action, you must place all of your remaining workers in that space.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, you might see those actions and go, oh, man, like, this one is going to be worth definitely two workers, but maybe even three workers to take this. But, like, is my opponent going to get it before me? If they're not, how long can I wait before I take this action, you know, one of these four actions before somebody else takes it? And, like, that is the, you know, shining star in this game. And I probably am going to steal that mechanism and put it into one of my own designs.
That is really cool.
It really is just, like, such a fun decision space, and it creates so much tension that's just kind of, like, looming over every other decision that you make in the game.
Yeah.
So that's I love it. Have you even heard of this game?
No, I just looked it up.
Yeah.
It's ugly as sin, so I don't want to play it.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't look great.
But dude, I'm all about mechanics. So that looks, I mean, that mechanic sounds really cool. So real quick, I want to interject here. One thing that I really hate is when people call, like, people say, oh, it's push your luck, right?
Sure.
To me, is push your luck is like, oh, you're drawing things out of the bag. You're going to decide when the,
yes,
you know, the chance that you're going to be drawing something is going to not be in your favor, right?
Yes.
When people say push your luck is like making decisions based off of what other people's decisions are going to be. I don't consider that push your luck at all, but I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes back.
Is it like, is it like push your skill? Like, this is directly off this mechanic. Like, I'm going to go until I think someone else, like, if I think someone on my next turn is going to, you know, take this action before I get another turn, I'm going to take that action now. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing as passing in Kalis. Like, oh, I think they're going to pass, so I'm going to pass before they can to make it more expensive. I'm going to get a dollar. You know what I mean? So do you have any idea what that mechanic would be called, or what?
You know, I don't know what it's like formally called, if there is any formal classification for it. I refer to it as risk management. That's like my term for it, is like that management of how risky choosing to do something is or not choosing to do it. So that's,
but you,
like,
you wouldn't consider push your luck, though.
No, definitely not.
Because it has nothing to do with luck.
Nope. No, I agree. And I think a defining attribute of Push Your Luck is that you act, like you said, you have control over when to stop. And, you know, your decision of like pushing your luck is the defining attribute. It doesn't have anything to do with what the other players do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, I wouldn't call it push your luck. I just call it like a risk management mechanism, but there's probably a better definition. We'll have to look into it. That's kind of like our discussion earlier. Like there's all these different implementations and mechanisms, and probably only half of them have like, you know, concrete definitions. The rest of them all are kind of working classifications or whatever. So the other one that I want to touch on is a game that we mentioned earlier. It's one of the granddaddies, Bus. The way that the worker placement is done in there is awesome. Basically, everybody has a certain number of workers. We'll say it's, I can't remember the exact number. I want to say it's like 20 or maybe a little bit more, but that's the amount of workers that you have for the entire game. And every time you place a worker, you spend it and it's gone for the rest of the game. And so you are, and you can like, you could spend half of your workers in the first round if you wanted to. But once you run out of workers, then your game is done. And so you're trying to be as conservative as you can, and it's very tactical. And so there's a lot of like, you know, oh, I'm gonna put one worker out now and just kind of wait and see what everybody else does, and then I might try and take another action later. I just think it's lovely. It's a great and it's funny to say variation of worker placement because it's like one of the first. So it's funny that it's like it feels like one of the most innovative, even though it's like one of the first. So, yeah, gotta give a shout out to Bus because it's a wonderful game and how they implement what we know as worker placement is super great.
Those splatter guys really know what they're doing.
Yeah,
do you own it?
I do not own it. Joe.
Joe owns it.
Yep.
Does he got own the, like the old copy or the newer copy?
No, he's got the capstone version of it.
Cool. So. I've wanted to play it, so yeah, another one added to the list.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and maybe talk about like one or two more somewhat quickly. If you want to throw Zolkin in there, go for it. I think it at least deserves a mention.
Yeah, let's see. I've got five. I'll cover them real quick.
Cool.
Because a couple of them marry the worker placement with other kind of aspects or other mechanics. So Istanbul kind of marries the Moncala aspect that we talked about earlier, about you have workers that you're using to move around Moncala style, so kind of adjacent to other tiles to select different actions, and so that's really fun because you have to leave a part of your, it's not a part of your worker, but it's one of your like helpers on different tiles. And eventually you have to try to pick them all up again to basically collect all your workers back. So that's really fun and unique. I would say it's on the medium to light side, not a heavy game by any means, but it's still kind of entertaining. At this point, it's almost like a filler game to me. It takes like an hour to play. Kind of fun.
Yeah.
Keyflower, I mentioned earlier. You have different colored workers and you're bidding on different tiles, but you can also, so basically a set of tiles are laid out on the board or on the table. You can either choose to bid on the tile to own it, or you can place your worker on the tile to actually use it while it's still out for bid, which is really cool. Keyflower is part of the Key series, which again, you talked about, was it Keydom was one of the first worker placement games?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
so one of the OGs. So yeah, they do a really good job. I haven't played any of the other Key games. I own Keeper, but I haven't played it yet. But I mean, if they're anything like Keyflower, I mean, I really like Keyflower, so I'd be really excited to play them. Zolkin, let's talk about Zolkin real quick. So if you haven't played Zolkin, and you like brain burners, this thing will melt your brain. It's one of the biggest brain burners I know of still today, and it was published in 2012. In this game, you can place workers out on this calendar, this gear calendar. So Zolkin is the Mayan calendar, and there's five different gears that you can place on your workers, and every year or time period, the center gear moves one, and that moves all the other five gears. And you don't actually take the action when you place the worker. You actually take the action when you retrieve the worker. But you can't place workers and retrieve workers on the same turn. And every time the gear moves, where you place your worker will move on which action your worker will do when you remove it. And so timing, and of course, they don't have the same amount of gear cogs, and so timing is this incredible headache of fun to try to time all these things, because sometimes you'll be like, oh, I placed this worker, I wanted to do the thing before, but I couldn't because I was trying to do this thing. Timing, so yeah, it's timing the retrieval of when you can take your workers and stuff is just awesome. So much fun. Heavy thinky, very, very good game. Yeah. I feel like that's a game. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I feel like that's a game where they designed it to be like, oh, you can place workers and retrieve workers at the same time. And they play test it and they're like, that's not nearly hard enough. And they're just like, you can do one or the other. Oh, it's impossible. It's perfect.
Yeah, seriously. This is a game where like, you have, especially in your first play, you have like five different moments throughout the game that are like those aha moments where you're like, oh, that's how you do this. And mm-hmm. then you realize that like you've made just horrible mistakes and you're probably not going to win. And yep. and it's awesome.
And
I actually
want to play again.
Yeah, and you want to play it. Yeah, exactly. I actually debated about whether or not to put this on here because I was like trying to determine how important the when the resolution happens, right? Because it's called worker placement. So I like wasn't sure if the resolution needed to be in the placement of it, because, you know, we would say that this is like maybe even more of a worker retrieval game. Mm-hmm. So I was getting a little bit in the weeds, but I was like, I mean, the placement matters because it affects where your opponents can place. So I feel like it does fit, but it really is unique in how it handles the worker placement concept, both with regards to the timing aspect, but also in that like it kind of promotes delayed gratification, right? Mm-hmm, like you're not getting the rewards right away. You're placing out, and then you need to be patient and wait, you know, until you're able to take the worker off and then get the rewards. So it's unique in many regards.
It's very easy to mess up your play, though.
So yeah, easy. It is.
It's like, oh, I can't do that. And that. And then there's like the whole aspect of someone can turn it twice and you're like, no, why'd you do that?
Yeah, for real.
So much fun. My last game I've talked about before, but it is also worker placement, on Mars. And the reason I want to talk about it again is because the worker placement, it's really an action selection. And the way you use the workers is really cool. Because there's some actions that you don't have to use any workers. There's some actions that you have to use workers semi-permanently on the action space. And then there's some actions that you can boost the action with workers.
Mm.
And then there's another action where you actually take the same workers you use for the action to put on the map of Mars to run some of the mines. And so the way the workers are used are kind of like threefold. And so I just thought that was really a unique take on the game, and how, you know, just playing with other ways of using workers in games. So I just wanted to honorable mention, basically.
Nice. Yeah, I still got to get this one played. It's just it's one of those games that you need some time to dedicate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to do that yet. So
one real other quick thing about the game is most worker placement games, you can choose from the whole board. This one, you're either in space, and so you can do all the space actions, or you're on Mars, literally on Mars, and you can do all the Mars actions. But if you're on Mars, you can't do any of the space actions, and if you're in space, you can't do any of the Mars actions. So I thought that was really cool, too.
Love it. So. Yeah, that's cool. That's that definitely is a different adaptation of the mechanism.
So yeah, that's what I got.
Awesome. Well, listeners, there's like a ton of fantastic games on here that if you haven't had the chance to check out, definitely go and look into them. There are so many variations of such, I mean, really what is a very like simple mechanism: place a thing out, get some stuff, or do a thing. So many different variations of it. And designers are continually coming out with new spins on it. So it's a very palatable mechanism, a very versatile mechanism. And it's good stuff. So that's going to be it for our discussion tonight. Thank you, Luke, for joining me. It's always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's an hour and a half went by, and it feels like hardly any time. It's always a good conversation.
I could keep going.
Yeah.
I could keep going.
Yeah. For the sake of time and for the sake of your listeners, I think we should probably stop.
Yeah, they were probably ready for us to stop like half an hour ago, but.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Too bad. No, I'm just kidding.
Put us on 1.5 times speed. There you go.
Yeah.
Save yourself some time.
For real. Yeah, listeners, I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you for your time and support, as always. If you did enjoy it, would you show me some love and do a few things for me? Comment on the podcast discussion page. Let us know about some of your favorite worker placement games or some games that you think implemented the worker placement mechanism in a really unique way. There's countless that we didn't talk about. So get on there and let us know some of your faves. Go ahead and join the Facebook group. Sign up for the newsletter if you are not already. Rate and comment on whichever platform that you listen to this on. Those ratings are important for getting us seen. And then, tell some people about us. If you think someone you know would be pumped on what we're doing over here, tell them where to find us. And as always, feel free to reach out to me via email or on the social medias. I would love to chat with you. On the next episode, I'm going to be talking with Andreas Odenthal about his game Cooper Island and his approach to game design. So that's going to be a good time. Make sure you come on back and peep it. Until next time, remember that the grass isn't always greener on the other side. But sometimes it is. And sometimes it's brown and dead, and sometimes there's not even grass at all. There's just like dirt or sand or, maybe even cobblestones if you're lucky, because those are lovely and wonderful. Deuces!